Hey, Cece, can you start us off with a prayer?
Heavenly Father, we just thank you for this day. We bless you and we praise you, and we thank you for this meeting today.
Kenny Johnson was a member of Rockdale County's Soil and Water Commission, one of five supervisors on that board. And often, he touted that he was the first Black man to chair it.
And I want you to know the difference between the commission and the soil and water districts.
As a soil and water conservation district supervisor, his job was to review site plans and erosion control for developments that disturb the land. It's the kind of work that put him squarely between the county's economic ambitions and the environmental damage he believed was getting worse. He was vocal about new development projects in the county. And if you remember from season one, he was especially critical of Biolab after the fire.
But this company is called a COD. What I mean is, it's a chemical oxygen demand. They treat their own water. And the chemicals that they keep on property, sulfuric acid, MIBK, that will kill you. Everybody in Rockdale County need to go to the doctor and check out their blood for toxins. Please get that out.
Kenny Johnson called out Rockdale County's other elected officials, too, for giving Biolab a 10-year tax break to build a 275,000-square-foot facility. It's seventh in the county.
What I'm angry at, too, is that $850 million of our taxes went to this company to kill us. Y'all are in charge. Y'all elected officials. We need a federal criminal investigation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson.
From listening to Kenny Johnson, you get the sense that all he wanted was straight talk when it came to soil, water, industry, and public health. For people in the know to answer important questions when they were asked. Over time, that approach meant he lost influence. He'd been removed as chairman of the Soil and Water Conservation District in 2021 after refusing to meet in person. He continued holding his own separate meetings, like this one from June 2024, often online and often alone.
They've been breaking the law. That's why you see all these trees going down, all this backup sewage. They are signing off on the permits for their buddies and for their developers.
And in them, he accused the state of going around Rockdale County to approve development permits, blaming the county and the Georgia Soil and Water Conservation Commission for letting builders cut corners.
I am going to be filing in federal court so we here in Rockdale County can get their foot off of our neck. They're destroying this county.
During his tenure, Kenny sued the city of Conyers, members of Rockdale County's Board of Commissioners, Georgia Governor Brian Kemp, and even the EPA.
I already got the county and Michael Regan, the secretary of EPA, now going to get the state of Georgia. So we're going to be fine. We're going to bring all of them that's just destroying Rockdale County. We're going to bring them all to court and say, hey, why are you doing this? And why are you going around the elected officials?
But that final lawsuit was dismissed because Kenny Johnson died 3 months after this meeting. Speaking to state legislators at the Capitol just days after the Biolab fire, he collapsed in the hallway. He was rushed to Grady Hospital in downtown Atlanta. By that evening, he was dead. There are plenty of theories about what happened to Kenny Johnson. We don't officially know how he died. What we do know is that when he died, a lot of what now seems to many to be reasonable questions about Biolab were left unanswered. In this episode, we look back with what we know now, information that might have given Kenny Johnson some peace of mind. I'm Pamela Kirkland, and this is Manufacturing Danger, the BioLab story. When environmental advocate Scott Smith came to Conyers after the fire, he came after residents reached out to him on social media, asking if he'd do tests on soil and water separate from what the EPA was doing. They had heard about some of the testing he'd done in East Palestine, Ohio, following the 2023 train derailment and chemical disaster there. When we met him last season, he said he flew straight from there to Conyers to get to work.
What I try to do is get as close to ground zero as possible to get a baseline. And we tested within probably 500 to 1,000 feet of where the water was discharging into the holding pond.
Scott says he's been doing this for more than 19 years, flying into disaster areas after people ask him to show up. And he says it's often to test for chemicals that no one else will look for. And that spot in front of ServiceMaster where Scott took his samples, well, it's about as close to testing at BioLab as you can get.
And the thing, Pam, is that if you can identify, you know, the hot, so the areas that are directly impacted and the areas that are not, even if you're in an impacted area, the good news is there are solutions out there. So what I tell people, there is really no need to have fear or panic, because if we understand what the chemicals are, we can, you know, people can fix it.
We've kept in touch as he's traveled from other parts of the country back to Georgia. Since then, he's spent a lot of time at chemical accidents that have happened since the 2024 fire at BioLab, with residents from places like Moss Landing, California, and Roseland, Louisiana, reaching out, asking him to do what he's done in so many other places.
I don't go anywhere unless residents reach out and ask for help. So that happened in East Palestine, and that also happened in Conyers.
A year after he first started working in Conyers, the scale of Scott's work had expanded. In the spring of 2025, he'd taken about 30 samples across 30 miles. By August, that number had grown to nearly 200 samples across at least four counties. Samples including soil, crops, furnace vents, and debris.
And the thing about Conyers is unlike East Palestine, where it was more invisible and the particles you can't see, you had soot and ash raining down and invading people's property. So it was very easy to collect these samples.
Yeah, some people reported chunks of debris falling in their yards. EPA officials said they were from pieces of burned structural debris from the fire. BioLab sent contractors to collect the debris from residents who reported it, but Scott told people to save it and call him instead. Records show BioLab did test some of the debris it collected for asbestos. None was found. It's not clear if they ever tested that debris for chemical contamination. Working with a team of scientists, Scott says they found identical ratios of certain chemicals in completely different areas.
This is kind of like a murder scene or fingerprints. You know, you've got blood splattered on a wall. So in this particular case, you've got contamination that may have been splattered in soil and furnace filters. So I'm seeing trends that go all the way close to ground zero out 30 miles out with the same ratios and the same contaminants.
Now, the EPA has dismissed Scott's findings before. Documents obtained by the Government Accountability Project showed the agency dismissed his findings in East Palestine in 2023 as not an accurate measure of risk. But that wasn't the only thing they showed. Records confirm that EPA public information officers were tracking Scott's movements and logging his social media posts. And the EPA still downplays one of Scott's earliest findings there. In his first round of tests near BioLab, he found traces of PAHs, short for polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, and dioxins. They're byproducts of burning chemicals and other organic material, and both can be highly toxic. He believes the source is Biolab and that the EPA's testing never found these results because they focused instead on chlorine and hydrochloric acid.
The problem is the responsible parties and the EPA, they don't look for the full spectrum of chemicals, and they can say, you know, you can't find what you don't, I say you can't find what you don't look for, then they declare everything safe.
Internal EPA emails show staff were aware that fires like the one at Biolab can produce dioxins, like what Scott found. But none of the EPA testing I reviewed shows they ever looked for them. An EPA spokesperson told me the agency takes concerns about its emergency response seriously, but did not address specific questions about whether EPA monitored Scott Smith or contacted officials in Georgia ahead of his Conyers testing. But now, Scott is joined by other voices who say his instincts about dioxins were right.
Is classroom 52 this way, do you know? It should be downstairs,
It's been a minute since I was on a college campus, but today I'm here because Georgia Tech professors Pamela Polley and Greg Huey are talking to chemistry students about the Biolab fire and the plume. You remember Huey from season one.
So just from kind of simple physics, if we're measuring high concentrations of things 21 miles away, if you live a mile within the Biolab, you're probably seeing 100 times higher levels at least. So we are seeing very significant levels of these things even days later after the incident. So there was obviously exposure still going on.
Some pieces of the puzzle, as Huey sees it, are falling into place. But he says his team still has a long way to go.
But now we're kind of going through the organic soup of things. And it's a little tedious, to be dead honest. But that's why it's probably going to end up being a master's thesis.
But it needs to be done. He hopes to release his findings publicly in the coming months and publish the results.
You know, I think in the long run, the most important thing we can do is publish in the scientific literature.
Greg Huey's mass spectrometer on Georgia Tech's campus was able to capture snapshots of the chemicals in the air from Atlanta.
We saw the highest levels of bromine ever recorded in the atmosphere.
Wow. Talk about a superlative. The highest levels of bromine ever recorded. That wasn't something I'd heard yet.
I don't know. They made the dioxins in that area. If I were out there, I would like to be looked at personally.
Maybe by now you're thinking to yourself, why worry about dioxins? Well, one, because they're a byproduct of burning the chemical TCCA, which is one of Biolab's main products. And two, because Greg Huey says unlike other toxic things in the plume, dioxins can stick around, persist in the environment for years, and sicken people for generations. Georgia Tech's Pamela Polley says she doesn't know why there's not more discussion around dioxins, especially knowing all the testing that happened in East Palestine.
And I'm not sure why there has not been more comparison done with the Palestine, Ohio situation, because they were looking for dioxins, for example, and all this, that this has not been done from the EPA.
Dioxins were a concern in East Palestine. Many residents asked the EPA to test for them specifically. A report commissioned by the state of Indiana a month after the accident showed dioxin levels hundreds of times greater than the exposure threshold. Scott Smith found high dioxin levels in East Palestine, too. Those were the results the EPA said were not an accurate measure of risk. The dioxin residue Scott Smith found in Conyers, he says, are 3 to 7 times higher than in East Palestine. And the EPA knew dioxins might be something to look for. I'll say it again. Internal EPA emails show staff were aware that fires like the one at Biolab can produce dioxins, but none of the public testing data I reviewed shows EPA ever looked for them. Professor Huey is still sorting through what was in the plume. Be on the lookout for a special episode once he's finished with that.
That's all I got.
That's great.
This talk happened during chemistry professor Pamela Polley's class. She spent her career studying how chemicals behave in factories and labs, And in her chemical equity course, her students figure out ways to make chemical safety knowledge accessible to the workers and communities most at risk of industrial hazards. I wanted to talk to her about something that we've been after since the beginning. What was inside Plant 12, the burned-down storage warehouse? Because we finally got our hands on inventory lists Biolab had sent to the EPA, to the county, and their own accounting of products.
So the TCCA is not listed, but they have something that is called FRD 90, mm-hmm. and that's what it is.
Okay.
So it's probably a trade name, I would suppose.
You'll remember TCCA is the scientific abbreviation for one of Biolab's main consumer products. Polay says that by using a trade name in the inventory instead, Biolab may have hindered the emergency response.
So it makes it always to me wonder, people who work on site that don't have chemical training, how would they know if somebody who already knows chemistry have a hard time figuring out what's the chemical specifically and what you should be worried about or careful about, and then they use all these abbreviations that someone will not really understand what that means.
Biolab's own filings showed millions of pounds of chlorine-based chemicals inside Plant 12. But as we learned in the last episode, the EPA's model assumed only 40,000 pounds were burning, something they say Biolab told them. But now we know there was far more material in the warehouse. Polay asked how Biolab could be sure only a fraction of it was in danger.
But in the fire, how do you know which chemical are reacting?
Right.
Because the fire already engulfed everything. So you have to consider all the chemical and the ones that are the most dangerous. The ones that have the bromine, right, mm-hmm. And the chlorine.
Polay says that kind of undercount has real consequences. If the numbers are wrong, so are the assumptions that guide the response, like how far to evacuate, how long to monitor the air, and whether or not to even test for chemicals poised to cause harm for years into the future, like dioxins. It seems like the one thing anyone determined to figure out what happened wants is accurate information. But even the people trying to find it have run into the same wall. Independent tester Scott Smith says the EPA kept tabs on his work in East Palestine. And at the same time, Kenny Johnson was asking the courts to make that same agency more transparent. In the months before he died, Kenny Johnson filed one last lawsuit against the EPA and Rockdale County. This was unrelated to Biolab, about older issues of construction and runoff into the Yellow River. The EPA was eventually dropped from the case. A judge said Kenny didn't have standing to sue the federal government. A few months later, Kenny's attention was still on the EPA, but now also on Biolab when he collapsed inside the state capitol.
I just want to continue his legacy. I want to finish this chapter of his life and help the citizens of Rockdale, because that's what he was all about.
Cheryl Garcia was a friend. She says Kenny believed people deserved to know what was in their soil, their water, and what chemicals were in their neighborhoods.
The only official who we can trust who's really knowledgeable about this stuff is gone.
Cheryl still wants to know what Kenny was working on in those final weeks, what files he left behind. But she couldn't get anyone to talk. Neither can I. More than a year later, Kenny Johnson's cause of death is still listed as pending. Next time on Manufacturing Danger, the Biolab story, we're heading to Louisiana, where another chemical disaster has left a community reeling.
Clean your property up. I have never seen a government agency tell people to go clean yourself up.
The parallels of yet another accident. That's next episode. Manufacturing Danger, the Biolab Story, is a production of Georgia Public Broadcasting. This podcast was written by me, Pamela Kirkland. Grant Blankenship is our senior editor. GPB's podcast team includes Sandy Malcolm, Jeremy Powell, Jake Cook, and Mark Davenport. For more, visit gpb.org/podcasts.